Liz, thank you so much for coming back.
Thanks, Darren.
And so one of the main things we were going to talk about, there's a few things today we're going to kind of discuss a general water theme. I know you've got a couple of announcements. I've got a couple of announcements. We'll kind of sneak them in as we go through here. But right off the bat, the most important thing, the number one topic was that last time you were on a few weeks ago, you were mentioning as part of the main page and the main one of the main things that you use to sort of say, here's the problem and we're the solution as far as Citizen Climate Lobby itself was, you have it right front and center on your website, which is the preview for the documentary Chasing Ice. So today, because it is World Water Day and because there's some more screenings coming up, and because I have now, since last interview, actually seen the documentary myself and loved it, we're going to be talking a little bit more detail about that as well. So why don't we start there? And just in case anyone was not around for the last time that we talked about this, if you just want to just remind us again exactly what is this documentary Chasing Ice?
Sure, Darren. It's one of the National Geographic photographers. It's a documentary about him. And he goes basically in cold regions all over the world. And he's filming and taking photographs of ice glaciers retreating. So it's a very visually stunning film. It's going to be shown again in Toronto, actually Monday night at the Bloor Hot Docs Theatre, which is going to be at 8:45. And we're going to be using this again. Citizens Climate Lobby is going to be using this as an opportunity to speak to people afterwards. The interesting thing about James Balog's journey in making this film and coming to this career path, where now he's basically completely dedicated to this project, which is called the Extreme Ice Survey, or EIS for short. And it was interesting to hear him say that 20 years ago, he was a climate change skeptic. And he said that he just couldn't believe that humans would be able to impact the chemistry and physics of the planet. And through his photography, he has been completely changed his mind. And this is now his life purpose, is basically to show these images and to go around the world speaking about the retreating glaciers.
I mean, now that I've seen the film myself, it's the sort of thing where you use the turn of phrase, you know, the evidence just slaps you across the face. He was almost nearly literally slapped across the face with it in the documentary. There's many, many scenes there of very harrowing feats dangling over cliffs that you can't even see the bottom of. There are many, many times when the earth would almost move out from under them. It was pretty nail-biting as far as a bit of a roller coaster ride.
Three knee surgeries, I believe, that he's had just to keep up with his career, yes, and his passion.
It's kind of like one of those things where in your mind you know that he's going to make it to the end of the film, because, you're probably aware by the time you've seen it that he's now been speaking about it afterwards. But in the moment, in your heart, you're sort of worried about that someone's not going to like fall into a glacier the entire time. It was quite exciting for a documentary.
Yeah, my favorite parts is when he's saying to the to his assistants that come out with him, and he's like, "Yeah, let's go onto that ledge. It looks pretty secure. It looks pretty secure. Like, it's going to be okay."
And one of the major things was they were able to catch the largest ever recorded calving, which I believe is how it's pronounced properly, the calving, the chipping off of the edge of a glacier. If my memory serves me correctly, I don't know if you have the number in front of you, if you remember, it was something like 2 kilometers wide.
I remember that it took actually 75 minutes that they were filming it, so which is huge. And calving, yeah, you're absolutely right, is actually spelled C-A-L-V-I-N-G. And it's so rare to get one of these episodes actually on camera, because they happen. I mean, they were talking about going out for 3 weeks and doing what they're called glacier watching. And it just happened to happen when they were on the phone calling James and saying, "Oh my God, it's happening now." And it's 1 kilometer wide chunks, yeah, that's a funny word, coming off of a glacier, and a glacier that flows 130 feet every day. And yes, it's 5 miles wide.
Wow.
That's right.
So one of the fun things about that clip, when I was searching for preview to choose to put on the website afterwards, which there will be a couple. There will be a, I'll put the trailer back up, and I'll put this other clip back up as well. They've actually, someone has cut up, I don't know with it's James Balog's permission or not, but somebody on YouTube has cut out just that section where they're watching the glacier fall out. So you can go and see just that one piece that they're talking about. Absolutely mind-blowing. And I think one of the important things that when he's doing his talks in the documentary, they show pieces of his journey and then also pieces of his talks that he started doing afterwards, was just the idea of, like, because of the situation where you're in, like, it's mountainous, it's almost all ice, and what's not is rock. There's virtually nothing for comparison, so it can be very, very difficult to even understand what you're looking at. And so I loved how he would sort of, like, show something and then put in scale, and then show something and then put in scale, because your mind's sort of like, okay, so that's like a hill, or, you know, at most, or something. You're like, no, that's like 14 football fields just collapsed in front of me.
Yeah.
It's astounding, doesn't even begin to describe it.
And as a speaker who shows PowerPoint presentations myself, it's great to show that scale, because people just don't get it until you show something that they understand. So one of the things he was showing was the vertical change and the Empire State Building, and he said it's double like the size of the Empire State Building for one of the glaciers that retreated. Since 1984, this one glacier retreated 11 miles.
One of the things that we wanted to mention this week as well was that I actually just got an email just before we were getting into the show today from Waterkeeper Alliance. So I thought, seeing as we're doing a water-themed show for today, that would just let everybody know that they're doing an actual photo contest. We'll put a link to that up on the post as well at the end. And then there was another water-themed conference that's going to be going on this weekend, film festival that's going to be going on this weekend as well. Did you have the note for that, Liz?
Yeah, it's called the Water Docs Film Festival, and it's done by Eco Logos, which is a great organization. I know a number of volunteers from there, and it's happening right now in Toronto. It's at the AGO Jackman Hall. You can get your tickets online, so you go to ecologos.ca, and it's going on until the end of Saturday. So it's I'm going to be going to see one of the films tonight. It's called Lost Rivers. It's a Canadian film, and I actually have a friend who works at the production company, so that's one reason I'm going to go. And it's going to be talking about Toronto and places in Montreal quite for sure, and I'm not sure what other places they'll talk about also.
Definitely. So I think coming back to that, you were mentioning doing presentations. So I think I'd like to ask you about that as well. With something like this, something that I've always been interested in is the idea of sort of using a film like this to inspire people into action. It seems to be you're dealing with somewhat of a specific target area, because like you were saying, like James Balog didn't really understand. He was a skeptic, and I think he was a skeptic not in the euphemism sense of skeptic, but an actual skeptic. I think he just remained skeptical
about the science,
as opposed to someone that was like, oh, I've heard 10 theories as to why this is a hoax, as someone that I would use the label denier for. So he was just, I think, just very much someone who was scientifically literate enough to sort of understand how difficult it would be to do what the scientists were claiming to do. So he was just scientifically literate enough to realize how much of an impact we'd actually have to change climate, and that caused his skepticism, which I think is something that it doesn't be given enough credit, which is that if you aren't aware of what the science is, if you haven't really looked into exactly what modern science is saying, I think it would be highly rational to be a skeptic. It is pretty astounding to think that we humans could cause some of this stuff, and I think if a good short version for that maybe is why using something like Chasing Ice is such a good preempt to getting someone to, for instance, sign up with Climate Citizen Lobby or another group or Inspiring Change, because it can be to go the hard route, to actually go and do all the research. There's so much information that you need, and it's not, watching this documentary certainly isn't a replacement for that sort of an education, but it can be a short form for people who just instinctively are just like, I don't understand how we could be doing that, we must be wrong.
And something that is said right at the end of Chasing Ice, he says the problem is with perception. People don't get it. And then that's why he's using this visuals. And in all my work, whether it's volunteer work or my career, I'm finding that, yeah, it's coming down to psychology. And I'm trying to learn more and more about that psychology, Darren, because I see that is people aren't responding to the facts. You know, even being shown these images, I wonder how many people will act on them. And the, my favorite image from the film is the Solheim Glacier. And he show the history proves that in 100 years, it's retreated 8 miles. And then his work shows that since in a 10-year period or less, I think it's actually 9 years, it's retreated the same amount, more than 8 miles. So that, I think, is one of those statistics and visuals that says it all. But still, we're human, and we're human psychology is very difficult to relate to things that are not affecting us immediately. And it's also difficult to relate to situations that don't seem like emergencies. You know, if you have a tornado hit you, which actually I've had that experience when I was younger. I lived in Barrie and experienced that. But but something that's happening gradually, it's very hard to see that as an emergency. But unfortunately, if we don't act now, it's just going to get more expensive and just tougher to make a difference. Yeah, so the visuals are very important, though.
And so, what sorts of reactions have you had when you're showing the film and then you're speaking to people afterwards? Generally, do people seem amazed at the photography? Because that was sort of one of the things that I wanted to identify as well, was that it's not just sort of the film is not a constant barrage of, oh my God, look what we're doing, we have to do something about this. He frequently stops and goes, you know what? If I wasn't here for such a crazy reason, like, this is stunningly beautiful. And so you're almost lulled into it's sort of way in which some people would think, and hopefully nobody jumps at me for this, but like, you could say that something like a picture of like a mushroom cloud, if you remove what it's of, is fascinating. It's amazing, and it's sort of in the way that like fire is pretty, but it's all the reality of it that's horrible, and there's nothing good about nuclear weapons at all. But it's sort of like one of those things where it's just, you know, the awesomeness of the natural world around us can sort of sometimes lull us a little bit. So I'm interested in. My take out from the movie was, I knew a lot of the facts, but seeing it was shocking. Seeing the comparisons to actually put it into scale was what really caught my attention. And then his inability to avoid stopping once in a while and just smelling the roses, as it were, also really caught my attention. What have you found jumped out at people when you're talking to them after they saw the film?
Yeah, the speed, when they're presented with that visual evidence of the speed of things that are that's happening. And I think it's always great to have something that is so popular visually. I think his National Geographic cover, when he first started sending the photography in, I think it was one of the most well-sold National Geographic covers. So, I mean, these things, the more popular something is, the more it becomes mainstream, right? And the beauty of this documentary is also it's very child-appropriate, so you can bring your kids. The visuals say it all, but whether people will act on taking those steps to make some change about it, that's always questionable.
Okay. And then we're going to take a quick break in just a few minutes here. But before we let you go just yet, Liz, I wanted to change tone on you just for a minute. Today, as you said, is March 22nd is the day we're broadcasting this. If you happen to be listening on one of our syndicates, that would have been whatever last Friday was for you, which would have been UN World Water Day. That started in 1993. 2013 is the World Water Year, also identified by the UN, talking about water scarcity and access to clean water. So while we're sort of doing a bit of a water theme here, how else do you think that these sorts of things can, is there any sort of lag with it? I mean, we were talking a bit before the show about how there's Earth Hour, Earth Day, World Water Day, Sweden has its own World Water Week, which I thought was kind of funny.
UN
and,
has...
And even you and I have some trouble keeping track of some of this stuff sometimes. Can we get too oversaturated with this sort of thing? Is declaring something a day useful?
I think it is. I think that as many opportunities as we have to keep the climate and everything involved with it in the news, on the, you know, forefront of people's minds, I think that's great. Yeah.
Do you think that is there any conflict? And by conflict, I just mean as far as like allotment of resources and actually getting stuff done, not problems between the two. But I mean, do you think that the difference has been drawn too starkly between treating water as a climate change issue, things like its indication of like falling ice and rising sea levels and that sort of thing, so water in sort of a climate change context, and the sort of human health context? Obviously, these two things are linked. But do you think it's perhaps a negative that they're separated so much? Is it maybe is not better that if we were sort of talking about all these water issues as one, rather than these UN days seem to be more focused on the public health issue of access to clean drinking water for people's safety? But shouldn't we be talking about this all together? Aren't they all related?
They are all related, but I think we come back to psychology again, and the human mind likes things in chunks and not... We're not as good integrating everything, and I think just the way that media works is also they like things in chunks. So I think people also from a psychological point of view respond better when health is an issue because that they see hitting them more personally. So I agree with you that I wish that there was more integration, but then just from the way humans tend to think and the way media works, it seems to work better that way to segment these days. Yeah.
Okay. So that's all about what time we've got for now. We're going to keep you on for a minute. I'm going to get Kevin on the phone to talk about some news items. But for now, if you want to just remind people how to get in contact with you and the website for Citizens Climate Lobby and any information you have about Chasing Ice.
Yeah, great. Okay. So Citizens Climate Lobby Toronto chapter is actually, we're doing our first fundraiser. It's going to be on Earth Day, which is Monday, April the 22nd, and it's going to be in North York. We don't have all the details ready yet, but they will be on our website in about a week. Where the website is citizens.climatelobby.ca. So I look forward to seeing people there. And if you are in Toronto, again, Bloor Hot Docs is having a documentary on Monday, March the 25th at 8:45 of Chasing Ice.
Okay. Thank you so much, Liz Rice. We'll get you back on again soon if you don't happen to stick around with us.